Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And for this one, I'm doing a double shot this week of wines from Barrel Select. And this one is Villa Gigiano, and I'm sure I mispronounced it. Tuscany, Chianti, Sangiovese. These are great DOCG Chianti classical wines. And I am talking with one of the winemakers, Gregorio Bendinelli. And this is a really good interview. This guy has got so much energy and is fun and tells some great stories, especially about his final nights in New York, his final night in New York before he had to go back to Italy at the start of COVID-19. You remember the start when it was cold and dreary and we had no idea what's going on. Now it's hot. And we still don't really know what's going on, but you're really going to enjoy this. This is a great interview about all things Sangiovese, about Chianti, about his family, about winemaking, and also on his final night in New York, the level of quality of wine that he drank. And he was told by this famous person, this famous like restaurateur, as I remember the story, go pick out a bottle that you want. And he decided, Gregorio, not to grab the nicest bottle. Well, you'll be pretty shocked. The bottle he grabbed. If the bottle he grabbed is not considered one of the nicest bottles, then damn, this guy is drinking some serious bleep in his home in Tuscany. Two little things. First, I want to review the wine that you can get at Barrel Select. And it's their 2016 Chianti Classico. And 2016 is a crazy good vintage. Go just research, just do vintage charts, Tuscany, Chianti Classico, that area for 2016 across the board. I looked it up with like Wine Spectator, Decanter, and a lot of other places. And this wine actually was reviewed by Wine Line and, you know, including John Szabo, one of the few master sommeliers in Canada. And it got rave reviews. Like this wine's getting rave reviews. This vintage is getting rave reviews. And $37 a bottle. And I need to say again, I don't get a dime for trying to sell the wines from Barrel Select. I'll just tell you now, I bought a case of it. I split it with my stepdad, Sesto, and he's a big Italian guy. He's got a little cellar in his basement that I've taken residence of one corner of it. And most of his wines it's basically Brunello, Chianti with a lot of Barolo, little bit of Barbaresco, actually a good chunk of Amarone, and then some other wines from all over the world. After that, a lot of California stuff. But he's mostly Italy, California. You know, why am I telling you this? This is not interesting at all. But anyway, I gave him a sip, and he was in for a six-pack of this wine. And the nose, the winemaker note says elegant and rustic, and it does make sense because there's this mix of like, oh, this is going to be douchey. Like this dusty road woodsy thing, but it's mixed with perfume and plenty of dark fruit, spicy flour wrapped together, neither one dominating. Now, it's not a big nose. You got to search for the nose here. It's not this huge expressive thing that's going to wham, that's going to hit you. But it actually did remind me a little bit of Bordeaux. And I remember watching a blind tasting when someone called Bordeaux on a Chianti. Who am I to make fun of someone? Some of my wine notes and where I've placed wine has been embarrassing. And now I want to apologize because on the nose, yeah, there was this plummy, you know, dark, earthy, plummy thing going on. Now on the palate, it loses a lot of the Bordeaux-ness. And then it's got this, and I'm going to use no fancy terms, I call it tangy Italianese. That comes from the Sangiovese grape. There's no way else to describe it but that. And when you drink the wine, you'll know what I'm talking about. And, you know, the acid is all there, strong tannins. You can age this wine for 10, 15 years easily. And it still is directed by a lot of dark fruit. And this is a really serious Sangiovese. And for under, oh God, I don't know if you heard it, my phone just made that noise, you know, when you go under 15%, it makes that sort of noise. It's so sad. Don't worry, BlackBerry, I'll charge you some point soon. Anyway, great vintage, great wine for under $40. This is a serious Chianti Classico. I would go to Barrel Select. Grab, I think you might even be able to get six packs of it. It's a great wine. Highly, highly, highly recommend. One other thing I wanted to talk about, and I don't know where it is if you're not in Toronto, because that's where I am, and I don't really visit many cities because, you know, COVID. But wandering around Queen Street East, the coolest thing, and I've seen it also on Queen East, Queen West, King, so many parts of downtown Toronto. You wander by these restaurants, and they all got the wines by the bottle. And they're just set up like little mini wine shops. And it is so tempting. Like, it is impossible for me not to go and at least buy one bottle. And you have to buy a little bit of food and you know, whatever. You can buy like $4 little thing of some sort of like pate or what, or cheese or just cured meats. But oh my God, I hope this continues. Like, listen, I'm rooting for restaurants open. It's safe. We eventually find a vaccine. But I hope the government keeps this up or it just allows this sort of flexibility because it's great. Like, I passed by like Ruby Watch Co. and some Italian places and one restaurant that specializes only in Canadian wine. And it's just, for someone who loves buying wine, it's fantastic. And in the end, I bought this, you know, really good 100% Cab Franc from Chenon in Loire, and it was really nice. Anyway, the point is, I hope wherever you are, go explore your downtown when it's safe and it's not too crowded, and see if restaurants are selling bottles of wine. It's a cool way of getting to try different stuff, a lot of stuff that might not be at your wine store that is purchased by consignment. So, anyway, I hope everyone is good. I hope everyone is safe as best as you can be. Thank you very much for everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember to tell your friends, subscribe, rate, review, you know, just all that sort of stuff. Anyway, you're really going to enjoy this. This was a lot of fun. Gregorio Bendinelli. Again, let me mispronounce the villa one more time. Gianno, you'll hear in the first couple of minutes. Me do what I usually do. Doesn't matter the language. I mess it up. Enjoy.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Cause, and now we go live to Tuscany, and we are talking with Gregorio Bendinelli from Villa. How do I pronounce your winery? Gigiano?
Villa di Gigiano.
Villa di Gigiano.
Matt, thank you for having me here, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you.
By the way, you can't see it. My girlfriend is in the background, and she is laughing at me because what people don't know is I actually said the name of the winery right before the podcast started. Then I start the podcast, and I screw up the name. So that's pretty much par for the course. So actually, I want to start sort of a different place. You were just telling me you were coming back from the vineyard. So I'm curious on this day, April 18th, what's going on in the vineyards right now?
Well, what I was doing is just a check to make also the deers escaping from inside the fence, which is important because at the time now is full spring, so the vines are sprouting and there are these very delicate gems which are the best food for deers, and so it's important now to let them go away, and starting from next week we will starting with the first treatments as well to prevent from diseases.
Actually, by the way, Gregorio, I forgot to I forgot to do the proper introduction for the listeners. I was wondering if you could tell everyone your role with the winery.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm the new generation of the family, the Bianchi Bandinelli family, which owns here the Villa of Gigiano since 1527. And I'm precisely the 17th generation of the family managing here the estate. I am 26 years of age and I started last year. I did my first vintage in 2019. I worked first in France. I traveled a bit the world. I was actually in New York just now. I just got back from New York where I was staying. And so I will try to take over and do the best out of this legacy in a way. And just a quick introduction to the villa. The villa, it's a national heritage, national Italian monument, located close to Siena in the countryside of Chianti, We are just 5 kilometers northeast of Siena. And the villa has always been in my family, and we've always been producing wine here in the area. Like the first exportation started in 1725. We have documents of wine sheet by Niccolò Bandinelli, who was a family member, in casks. To London. So that's
That's crazy. Okay, so I have lots of questions. I want to talk I want to talk about your first vintage last year, but first, how was it in New York and you getting out? What was that process like?
Everything escalated pretty quickly, I would say. I was there working with our distributor, and I was actually supposed to visit Toronto in a couple of weeks now. And then just when the mayor of New York declared the situation was pretty complicated, they closed down the schools. I decided that was better to get one of the few flights that was organized by the national Italian embassy for Italians to go back to Italy, and so I came back. We had quite a crazy last night in New York with the other members of the wine industry. Restaurant shut down, so it was quite a delicate moment for everyone, but it was very emotional for everyone. So it was a beautiful farewell, I would say. And now I don't have the sense of smell or taste, so it's quite complicated for me as well to taste the wines. I was looking forward to come back, but I lost completely the sense of smell of taste.
Really? What did the doctor say?
Because of the virus.
How are you feeling now?
Now I'm feeling like great. I mean, like I've always been feeling great. Never had other symptoms, but I completely cannot smell or taste anything, which is for a winemaker is quite a nightmare.
Yeah, that is. Have they talked to you about how long that'll take? About when you will recover?
No ideas. No one knows really what it is because everything is so new.
Well, I got to tell you, I hope for the best and that this clears up. I mean, I think you could tell the listeners, and I think most of them would know, a winemaker without the ability to taste or smell, like being an artist, you can't see.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be like the end of a career at the beginning, in a way. Let's hope for the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell me about your first vintage last year. That must have been exciting.
Yes, it was very exciting. Let's say that I did the harvest, the previous harvest, the 2018 harvest. I was in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, working with Vieux Telegraph, with Daniel Brunier and the family. There I got to see also how the new generation there, which is around my age, they took over the production and they were applying a fresher view, fresher look into winemaking to the historical winery as well. And I tried a bit to get their example and come back. And of course, following everything that has been done before, my uncle has been the winemaker since for 25 years now here, and so I was learning a lot from him, from Fulvio, which is another important winemaker in our cellar. But at the same time, I was trying to apply some new a new vision for the area as well, which is attention to the crus, to the terroirs, and to the each different vineyards. So I would say the main addition that I did is to keep everything separate and to pay a lot of attention in understanding the characteristics of each singular vineyard, which is something that we are getting to see more and more here in the area, especially in Chianti Classico. Of course, in Piedmont, in Barolo region, this has been going on for a long time. But this is recent here in Chianti Classico, and I believe it's going to be our future.
Why do you think it took a little bit longer for Chianti Classico to start to change?
Well, I would say this idea of terroir, and that each singular vineyard expresses itself in the bottle in the end, it's coming from France, mainly. I see it coming from France, And Piedmont, like in the 60s, 70s, has been a lot in touch with France. And so they developed, thanks also to Masnaghetti as well, which was an important addition for the Piedmontese wine region. And for us, it's something that is coming now, again, from France, from the region of Barolo. And we are applying also some scientific tools to understanding each different cruise. In fact, with our association of winemakers here in Castelnuovo Berardenga, region of Chianti Classico, where Geggiano is, we are studying each singular winery is studying its two best cruise, and we are keeping the data for 3 years, and then we will be able to understand the differences amongst all the different crews of the area, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, that must be really exciting just to go into that direction and just see the difference in only being a couple hundred yards, 100 meters apart.
Exactly, and it makes a big difference. It does make a bit different. We have our estate is it's very small. It's a minor school estate, but that allows us also to know each one of the vineyards very well. And all the vines and the vineyards are just around the estate, but like the difference of 100 meters makes completely different wines, which is interesting for me.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about the wine that people can get at Barrel Select. It's your 2016 mm-hmm. Chianti Classico. I was wondering if you could tell people if they're going to get the wine, what they could expect.
Well, like 2016, now not because it's the one on sale, but 2016 has probably been the best vintage that we have done here at the estate. My father also considered it the best. 15 and 16, they were two very good vintages in a row. But for us, 16 has a higher fragrance, beautiful structure, very complex wine, but more fragrant than the 15. And the Chianti Classico that we do is 100% Sangiovese. We did in 2016. It's coming from vines between 20 to 30 years of age, so relatively young. And after a fermentation in stainless steel tanks using indigenous yeast, so it's a very natural and traditional style of winemaking, artisanal, I would say. Then we move it into French oak barrels of 500 liters for a period of 2 years, 2 years and a half, before it gets bottled and then goes into the market. The 2016 has been bottled already 2 years ago now, 1 year and a half ago. So it's fully developed as well in the bottle, and it's a beautiful wine. It's probably my favorite Chianti Classico.
I'm curious. So you said with the French oak, you're using 500 liter bottles or oak barrels. So I'm curious why that versus the smaller, the smaller barrels. The barriques. Thank you. What is the difference in terms of the flavor impact if you use the barrique versus what you guys are using the larger ones?
For us, the tonneau has always been a good way in between the barrique, so a very intense influence of the oak and shorter period of aging and like faster period of aging on the wine, and the big cask, the big body of 30 to 50 hectoliters. And we use mainly old oak, so we try not to influence too much the characteristics of the grape variety and our terroir with too much vanilla, toastiness, like overpowering flavors of the oak sometimes. And it's just a way to make the wine get the oxygens that it needs to be stabilized and being able to last a long period of time. So I would say the choice of the 500 liters barrels is to have like an influence of the wood, so the oxygen coming through, but not too much as it would be in the barrique, and not as low as it would be in a bigger 30 to 50 hectoliters cask.
Was this always going to be a passion? Like at a young age, did you realize you wanted to follow in the family footstep?
Well, like being the only male I quite have understood since a young age that at one point it would have been my future. And let's say that my background, I did humanistic studies in high school, and then I moved towards more scientific paths. I graduated in engineering. My passion has always been physics. And let's say until I was 22, I was more into a contemplative life. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to do theoretical physics and do research in that field. And then at one point, I remember I was in Barcelona, actually, and I decided to throw myself into something more practical and concrete and do something. And I started having my visions for the state, and I fell in love with the idea of continuing something. And I felt very grateful for having the opportunity to get something that my family has kept so well for many years. And to make it my own, of course, with the supervision of my father and my uncle, which are great in passing me the legacy in a way, and to make it my own, and to open the gardens of the villa for a contemplative life, and to make a wine which is like my kind of wine, like my vision for the wine. And I think like making a vision becoming reality is one of the most satisfying things that you can have. Like it's challenging, yeah, but it's also satisfying. So I'm very happy with the decision that I made. And it's a constant growing process. I'm learning a lot. I'm young, so I still have a lot to learn about winemaking and about the how to make my vision for the wine happen.
I've talked to so many winemakers in their 40s and 50s, and it's always interesting to see how different they are then versus when they got started. Mm-hmm. At around your age. This might be a hard question, but if you were going to describe your vision for how you want to mm-hmm. make wine going forward, what would be some of the highlights of your vision?
Oh, that's a very good question. Let's say that I was struck. When I was working in Vieux Telegraph there in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, I was going over the weekends to l'Hermitage, the hill of Hermitage, to read and to walk. And there, I think I had like the first vision for the wine that I wanted to do, and like the kind of cure and attention that I wanted to put into wine growing and wine making happen. And so one of the like main characteristics that I would like the winery and the wine to become is a very manicured, cured feeling that you can feel when you see the relationship, the close relationship that man has with nature, and the love that man puts into nature and what he's doing, that often reflects in a sort of a form of art. I like the aesthetical part of making wine, and in terms of like the characteristics of the wine that I would like to achieve with our Sangiovese are mainly freshness and expressivity of the terroir, and making a vibrant wine. That's what I would like to achieve. I think the vibration in the wine, it's very important. Like I'm very curious about studying the first Beaujolais movements with Lapierre, and understanding how having natural style of wine growing, applying organic techniques, makes the grapes and therefore the wine a much more alive product. That's what I'm interested in.
How has the rest of the people, your father, your uncle, how do they feel about this? If you're going for this, a bit of a different vision, where back in the old day, maybe it was more about, you know, power and structure for mm-hmm. the wine. You want mm-hmm. more freshness, more fragrant. What mm-hmm. does your father and uncle feel about this?
Well, it's always like we are three men, so it's always difficult to arrive to a common conclusion. And we discuss a lot. Yeah. We talk. We exchange different visions. And most of the time, after some fights and some lovingly fights, of course, we arrive to a conclusion which is a bit the mean of everyone's point of view, which is also what is good to have in a way. And I'm actually just now starting, coming back from New York. I committed myself. I'm starting a new label, a new bottle of Geggiano, which I would like to be my contribution to the family legacy, to the history of Geggiano. And for this bottle, I will start making like a very small amounts, like in 100 bottles amount. But in that bottle, I would like to express myself really without any kind of influences from around. And I would like to it to become my project, my future. In 20, 30 years, I would like it to become like, I'm quite ambitious. I would like it to become one of the best wines one of the best Sangioveses of the area.
That is very ambitious. Also, that is really interesting. I mean, that would be cool. Just having your own, that's a little bit different. I'd be curious to years down the road to taste it versus more traditional Chianti Classico. I was going to say that would be really cool to try your vision compared to traditional Chianti Classico, which, by the way, I absolutely love traditional stuff. It would be interesting to try two side by side.
Yeah, I will always like apply very traditional style of winemaking and like using the same tools that we have in the cellar, but I would like myself to be expressed into the bottle, not being like filtered by anything else.
Right.
Which I think it's what makes making wine beautiful, because you can like build and like you can change a bit and you can really express yourself.
Gregorio, I was wondering, you've worked in Hermitage, Chateau Neuf de Pape, Chianti Classico. I was wondering a couple of the best bottles of wine that you have ever had.
Well, that's, I would say, I had that very, very intense and exciting moments drinking special bottles. And I think the two best experiences of wine in which we really tasted like amazing bottles were one in Chateau Neuf du Pape with the new generation of the Brunier family, so Vieux Graff, and the new generation of the Perrin family, so Chateau de Beaucastel and so on. And we just finished a long day of harvest, starting from 6 a.m. and finishing around 7:38 in the evening. And I was invited to have what it was supposed to be just a glass of wine in the villa of César Perrin. And we ended up going down in his private cellar, and I was surrounded by the most amazing French bottles that I could imagine. Like, there were like 30 different vintages of Latache, 30 different vintages of Chateau Latour, because of course he worked as an intern in those wineries, and so he had the intern price for those bottles. So he managed to get a lot. And he told me, like, choose whatever bottle you want.
Choose?
I didn't want to go for, like I didn't want to be sort of a bastard, let's say, and go for the most expensive one. But I in the end, I selected the 1988 Petrus, which, of course, it was a bit of a...
Yeah. Wait a minute. You said you didn't want to do the best bottle, but did Petrus.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had champagne. Like, we finished like with like 9 or 10 bottles. I feel like then the memories are a bit confused, but because we were just three, we finished like 9 bottles with empty stomach, and we went out of the cellar crawling out and going back home. Like it was a beautiful experience. A more recent one was in New York, and the last night, I will not make names because they're all like important people of the industry in a way, but it was the last night. It was supposed to be a Geggiano evening, so in which I was cooking pasta, and we were pouring the wines for top buyers of New York. But it was like also the time in which all the restaurants of New York shut down. They were forced to shut down. So it was a very emotional moment for everyone. So all these like top sommeliers came, and we had a dinner. And one of them said, okay, my restaurant is closing. The cellar is getting emptied, and I have the keys of the cellar. So let's go, come with me, Gregorio. We go and we get a couple of bottles just to taste. And we ended up like then going with a full of bags And with an Uber, we arrived there. It was like an historical restaurant for New York, a very important name. And we went down into the cellars and we got like 30 of the most expensive French bottles, like with age. And we got them all and we brought it back where we had the dinner. And we stayed there until 6 a.m. in the morning, drinking them all. Like it was an amazing experience, that one as well.
That is great. Hey, by the way, speaking of like, you know, of celebrity, because these are celebrity wines that you are drinking. I'm curious about the Villa, your guys' relationship with Sting.
Well, like Sting became a wine producer here in the area. And the relationship that we had with him passes through our restaurant that we have in London. We have a Villa Di Giugiano restaurant open in 2014. And we became, through the restaurant, the main distributors of Sting's wines. So the relationship is mainly given to the fact that we are distributing his wines, but he's a fellow winemaker and he lives not far from here. So we saw him and that's the main relationship that we have with Sting. But the Villa during the years, it's been like many celebrities and like Hollywood stars passed by. It was the set of a movie in 1996. I don't know if you know, it's called Stealing Beauty, done by Bernardo Bertolucci with Liv Tyler, the daughter of Steven Tyler.
That was done at your guy's place?
And it's actually like a very nice... like it's a very romantic story in a way, because it's been selected and shot in 1995, between 1995 and 1996. And that was the year in which my father and my uncle decided to move back here at the estate and start producing wine themselves here. So they used the income generated by that movie to buy back some land, plant some Sangiovese, getting some barrels and starting the production of wine again, because I don't know if you're familiar with our history, which is quite unique and interesting. I don't know if I have just 5 minutes to tell you about that.
Do it. Go.
Yeah. Well, it's actually trying to condense 1,000 years of history in 5 minutes, but I will do my best. So let's say that everything here in Giugiano started 1,000 years ago when the first member of the family, it was called Bandinelli, not a very creative father, I would say, moved to the area. And he was an able politician. He acquired a lot of power. And he had three sons. And one of them, Rolando, was elected Pope, became Pope under the name of Alexander III. And therefore, as you can imagine, the family started acquiring a lot of wealth and power, and in terms of riches, and as well as estates and land around the area of Siena. And amongst one of the estates, the estates that they came into the family, came also Giugiano in 1527, and was one of the many villas and estates that was in the family at the time. And then it happened that in the 1800s, a member of the family, he was a firstborn child, he was called Mario Bianchi Bandinelli, he decided to rebel from the strict rules of noble families. He fell in love with a beautiful woman. She was a commoner, was not another countess like he was supposed to get married with. And they got married. They broke free and they got married. But for this reason, he was disinherited. He got disinherited by the father. Huh. And he was given the choice of selecting the state where he wanted to stay as a sort of legitima sort of heritage. And he selected Giugiano. So he selected amongst all the states and all the like riches, he selected Giugiano as a place for him to stay. And so that's why, like, amongst all the power of the family, which was one of the most important, probably together with the Chigi family, was the most important families of Siena. He then stayed here, and then time passes, and after the Second World War here in Chianti, there is my great grandfather staying at the villa. It was Ranuccio Bianchi Bandinelli. Was like an archaeologist, an intellectual. He was one of the most influential archaeologists and historian of art of the time in Italy. And he was a count, but he was of political ideals were socialist. So he was called the Red Count by the other nobles of the area. And he decided to give away everything that he had. He gave away all the land and the farmhouses around the state. He gave away 200 hectares of land and 20 colonic houses to the farmers of Geggiano to form a cooperative. And at that point, that was 1959, the production at the villa stopped completely because there was no more land, no more houses, no more workforce. And so for over 40 years, like the villa remained like abandoned. And just my family was coming here during the summertime. And in 1995, so when we started talking, in occasion of this movie, this Stealing Beauty, my father and my uncle decided to move back to the States that was supposed to be sold. Otherwise, my grandfather put it already on sale. And with like they abandoned their jobs in Rome, and with a great leap of courage, they decided to come here and make activities with the villa again. Like they started making wine, and they opened the villa to host events and guided tours and trying to make it work and survive.
So basically, your winery, the history goes from the Pope to Liv Tyler.
Yes. Exactly. That's it. It's a very, very steep downhill.
Yeah. Hey, Gregorio, this has been fantastic. By the way, the Geggiano 2016, how long could you age that wine?
Our wines, we are in the southern tip of Chianti Classico, and so it's generally a warmer climate, lower altitude of the hills, and therefore a bit more powerful and structure kind of wines. The soil is clay and sand. So everything goes into more like structure and powerful wines. And so we have seen that our wines, they age very well, and they actually get way better with age. Our reservas, you usually have to wait between 5 to 6 years to really see them, how they are in their full potential. And they go on for 30 years easily. And the Chianti Classico, our goal is to have also freshness and like a bit more like direct and fruity wine. So to not lose those characteristics, I would say to drink it in the next 5 years. But it's a wine that can give beautiful surprises. And, of course, it will last for 15 years easily.
Gregorio, this has been fantastic. And, again, for people, try these wines. Oh, do you got me?
Yes. Okay, thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. I just wanted to say people should go out, try the wine. You can get it here in Ontario from Barrel Select. And, Gregorio, I wish you nothing but the best, your family, safety, and health. And hopefully we can get this through this soon. And more importantly, I hope you the best in your recovery for full health.
Thank you very much, Matt. It's been a pleasure, and I wish all the best for you as well. And thank you so much for making me and other winemakers to tell their stories, which I believe we are in a time in which with e-commerce and like not being in touch with each other, having an opportunity to listen to different stories and to see the winemakers, what they do, it's a very important task that you're doing.
I could not agree more. Thank you so much. All the best, my friend.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember to rate, subscribe. You can get me on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.